Start my timer. I am a graduate student in the MD-PhD program at the University of Michigan. I am studying pancreatic cancer, which is why I'm giving the talk on cancer today. And the inspiration for this talk actually came up in a discussion I had with a couple of my friends over a couple beers. I was talking about how I was approached by people not in the biological sciences who would just come up to me and be like, well, what is cancer and why the hell haven't you cured it yet? Are you researchers just taking our money and like wasting time just scratching our balls? I was, as a research fellow, I was hurt. It was a very good friend. I was hurt, but I thought it was a pretty legitimate point because until fairly recently, I didn't understand the complexity of cancer and why it was so hard to cure. So, all right, well, first of all, why do we care? Should we care? What is this? Have you heard about war on cancer? It's pretty dramatic, right? So we have this war on cancer going on. It has been going on for years and years. It is the concerted effort of people at individual, national, and federal levels, millions of dollars spent, countless hours spent on research, looking for a cure for cancer. Now, should we care that much? Is it really necessary? War on cancer is such a dramatic choice of words. I'm a numbers person, so I thought I could throw some numbers at you to try to convince you that, yeah, it's pretty legit. Some numbers, direct medical cost to patients in 2011 was $88.7 billion. That number is projected to double by 2020. This year, 2015, 1.6 million patients will walk into their doctor's office and hear the words, you have cancer, 1.6 million. This year alone, almost 600,000 patients will die of cancer. That's 1,600 persons a day. And of course, individual costs, I couldn't even begin to try to put a number on the individual cost of patients who suffer from this disease. The pain, the anxiety from worrying about medical costs of all things, worrying about the well-being of their loved ones, and the freaking scary nature of being diagnosed with something that there is no cure for. I can't put a number on it, and I'm gonna guess nobody can. Anyway, the point is, in terms of incidence, personal cost and cost to society, cancer deserves that. That war on cancer deserves that dramatic phrase, and this is one justified war. Probably the only justified war I know of. And, disclaimer here. So I'm a little bit outspoken, but I'm the ignoramus. Surprise! I'm a little bit outspoken, but I in no way represent any part of Michigan. I love Michigan, but I don't represent it. I'm here as a nerd, free of all affiliations. And if anything I say offends you, I'm the ignoramus who doesn't vote. So don't take it too seriously. All right. What is cancer? So I asked a whole bunch of friends. Because I thought the audience would be like a mixed. All my friends are like med students, PhD students. Like, they know what cancer is. And they're like, why are you giving this talk? Like, everybody knows why you haven't cured cancer yet. So I asked a bunch of friends who are not in the biological sciences what they thought cancer was. And there was a huge range in the answer, but the median answer was, it looks like everybody knows what it is. It is the disease caused by an uncontrolled division of abnormal cells in a part of a body. And that's exactly right. Cells uncontrollably growing in some part of a body. So in lung cancer, you have lung cells going crazy, making tumors in the lung. In pancreatic cancers, you have pancreatic cells going insane, making tumors in the pancreas. So here's a point that I have to make. You don't hear about just cancer. Nobody has just cancer. Everybody has lung cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer, insert name of organ here, cancer, some cancer. And here I have to point out, really, cancer is not a disease. It is a group of diseases. And because the nature and function of the organs from which each cancer arises is very different. Think about the difference between the lung and the pancreas, for instance. The nature and function of the cancers that arise from these organs is very, very different. And perhaps the difference can be most easily seen in just numbers, stats. I could have chosen, I guess, a less grim stat, but cancer researchers really focus on the 5-year relative survival rate, so here it is. I apologize, I should have thought about it. But you can see, for instance, breast cancer, top left, the 5-year survival rate for breast cancer patients at all stages is 89%. The same statistic is 7 for pancreatic cancer. And you can see that the number really jumps everywhere from 99 to 7, depending on which type of cancer. And the type of cancer is defined by where it starts. Now, the variability is not only among the types of cancers, but also within each type. And here I have to expand on the critical point that I made earlier. Cancer is a group of diseases defined by the organ of origin. Now, the problem is that the variability doesn't just stop from type to type, from organ of origin to organ of origin. It differs from patient to patient. It differs from tumor to tumor in the same patient. Not only that, from one cancer cell to the next cancer cell in the same tumor in the same patient. Is a cure even possible? Yikes. Well, that's why I'm giving this talk, right? Is a cure even possible when the problem is just unmanageable, statistically ugly level of variability in this deadly disease? Well, let's think about like some sort of blanket cure that we know of. This is not true, but like the best thing I could think of was antibiotics, right? You get a bacterial infection, you take antibiotics, yay, you're fine. Antibiotics work because bacteria are so different from normal human cells that it's very easy for scientists to make drugs that target specific aspects of the bacteria. So you kill the bacteria, leave the normal cells alone. Targeting cancer cells is basically like a crazy, deranged version of my own self. Trying to target a cancer, my lung cancer cell, while sparing my normal lung cell, is like trying to tell the difference between me and my evil twins that you can kill the right one. And I really don't want you to screw up on that part, right? Really don't. Anyway, so right now I would say it's a little bit difficult, but you all know that it is not impossible to tell the difference between identical twins. My identical twin and I, she's evil, I'm nice, but there are also other differences. We have different fingerprints, we have different preferences and personalities, and that's what we're going to talk about a little bit later, but for now, I want to get back to the basic cause of cancer real quick. Uncontrolled growth. If there is uncontrolled division leading to disease, it implies that there is actually, in normal physiology, controlled division, and that is exactly right. Cell division, high school, right? I was like, oh my god, no. Mitosis, yes, yes. Actually, I have beef with this. It shouldn't be called cell division. It should be called cell multiplication. Division implies like, you know, decreasing the total amount of cytoplasm, DNA, whatever. That's not important. I'm done. There is normal. Anyway, cell division is a normal part of human physiology. In children, you know, you see the nephews who go from like yay high to like yay high in like a month. That's growth. In adults mostly, and that's us, in adults it's mostly about tissue damage repair and also regeneration. You cut your finger, wait a minute, a little bit more than a minute, and then, you know, you get new skin, like literally new skin, and you're totally fine, all right? Now, in cancer, you get uncontrolled division. Why do you get uncontrolled division? Division happens along a cycle that is carefully regulated. Cell cycle with many, many checkpoints. And you want these checkpoints because if you think about it, it's a pretty complex process. You're going from one cell to two identical cells. You want to make sure you got all of the right materials in the right quantities at the right time at the right place. You don't want to just go dividing, otherwise you got cancer. So the idea of having nice checkpoints along the cycle is pretty simple. But this is closer to reality. You're not supposed to be able to or want to read it, so stop squinting if you're trying. So this is a very, very, very complex, closely regulated cycle. And you can see that there are many, many, many places this thing can get screwed up, resulting in dysregulation of division. For example, let's take a look at our friend Rab here. Normally, Rab binds to E2F and stops cell division when necessary. Let's say there's a mutation that causes Rab to say change its shape so it can't bind to ETF any longer. Once that happens, E2F is free to go, do its thing, and allow the cell to divide even if it's not supposed to. Uncontrolled growth, tumors, cancer. So what caused the mutation in the first place? I'm going to run through this. Y'all know we have DNA. DNA is a blueprint of everything in your body that you're ever going to need to like live and grow and be happy and whatnot. Now, what happens is your DNA codes for something that you need in your body becomes RNA, which becomes protein. An example of protein is our friend Rab that we mutated in the previous slide. Now, it's important for you to remember that it's not Rab itself, the protein, that's mutated. It's a mutation in the DNA that gets manifested down the stream in its protein counterpart. Now, what causes genetic mutations? Y'all know this. Some of them are inherited, like the breast cancer gene. Other ones are environmental. You've heard of all these carcinogens you're supposed to stay away from because, I'll get to it. You're supposed to stay away from because they give you cancer. And I put life because oxygen, you know the thing you breathe to live? Causes mutations. Yeah. Good. it causes mutations. And so does cell division, which is a normal part of physiology, absolutely necessary. So it's kind of funny because I do cancer research, right? So then a lot of people come up to me when I'm doing something I'm not supposed to be doing, like, ew, why are you eating that like little burnt piece of bacon? Like, it's gonna give you cancer. Like, I say that and I say life is carcinogenic. So y'all go out, defend your bacon, okay? Let that happen. Anyway, between all of these things, right, you get, on average, I can't say on average, you get between 10,000 and 1 million hits to your DNA per day. 10,000 to 1 million mutations in your DNA. Okay. I have a little bit of Chicken Little syndrome. When I heard this number in bio, I was like, no, actually, I was like, oh my God, we're gonna get cancer and die. Why the hell am I even alive right now? Fortunately, I stayed in class. And I learned that there's good news. First of all, the stars have to align for you to get cancer. Multiple mutations are necessary. And most of the cells that get mutated just get destroyed on site. I mean, that's the point of the checkpoint, right? And on top of that, even if some of the cells just kind of bypass the checkpoint with mutations, our DNA repair machinery is superb. However, it's a game of numbers and probabilities. With 37 trillion cells in your body, it's just a matter of time, and the stars will align. Wait long enough. Wait long enough, and you will hit everything, and you will result in a cancerous cell. This is why cancer is a disease of age. Cancer incidence has gone up because we're living longer, long enough to suffer from cancer. So that's kind of like a backhanded good news for you. So so what do we do about it? What do we do about it today? When I hear I have cancer, what do I do? What are my options? In general, it's surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. Surgery and radiation seek to get rid of the tumors, well, surgery by cutting it out, and radiation by targeting it with ionizing radiation. Chemotherapy is giving patients drugs that are supposed to target cancer cells. Now, each of these options have problems. Surgery, the obvious complications that come with surgery, and also the fact that not all patients are viable candidates for surgical resection of their tumors. For many persons, it's not even an option. Radiation, the surrounding tissue can get damaged, and unfortunately, it's rare, but it can happen. You can get a secondary cancer from the radiation treatment for the primary cancer because radiation is, as you all know, carcinogenic. Chemotherapy, the problem with chemotherapy deserves its own slide. So chemotherapeutic drugs were developed to target not specifically cancer cells. They were developed to target fast-growing cells because that is what cancer cells are by definition, like ridiculously super fast-growing cells. Now the problem is, as I mentioned before, cell division is a normal process in the body. And because chemotherapy targets fast dividing cells, the normal cells that are hit the hardest are the ones that divide the fastest. This is why you often see patients of chemotherapy, undergoing chemotherapy, losing their hair, for instance. But there are many, many other cells that are targeted, which is why you get a host of side effects. So why not make more specific drugs? We have. We did it. We've been working real hard, the research community and their doctors. Everybody has been working really, really hard. And these are a couple of drugs specific. These are a couple of drugs very specific and very effective for these types of cancers. Before these drugs came out, patients with these conditions had virtually no hope. These drugs were a real sign of encouragement and cheer for the medical community as well as the public. But don't want to beat the dead horse, but I do have to draw your attention to the fact that these treat only specific types of cancer. And to get back to that, why is that? Well, it's because of kind of the definition of making a specific drug for variable cancers, right? If you look at those drugs target, don't try to read this either. Those drugs target, I guess, a part of the specific type of cancer that is very different from others. And those are defined by the cancer's genetic profiles. And as you can kind of guess from this table, the genetic profile of cancers is very, very different. The number of mutations that you need to get certain types of cancers and the place you need the mutation different from type to type. And to make things better, more complicated, a gene that can be pro-cancer in one type of cancer can be anti-cancer in another kind. So you see what we're into. So, no, really, do I think there will be a silver bullet blanket cure for cancer? Right now, I would say no, but that's because I don't know what future research will bring. I am a hopeless optimistic, and I believe that eventually we will get there. And don't let anybody tell you no. They're just speaking out of their asses. Tell them that people who say things can't get done shouldn't get in the way of people doing it. There are people doing it. We're working really, really hard. Everybody knows. Thank you. So, the silver bullet blanket lovely cure for cancer, for all the cancers in the whole wide world, is elusive. But that doesn't mean we're not working. So I'm going to hit very briefly on the sexiest current research that's going on in cancer. One, we use the term sexy very often in science. We also use the word promiscuous, but it's okay. One, early detection for obvious reasons. I'm 18 minutes and a half in, so I'm going to talk real fast. Early detection for obvious reasons. The main reason pancreatic cancer, you'll have heard of this, is one of the scariest diseases, is because by the time we get to a patient who is presenting with symptoms for pancreatic cancer, we are too late. That thing has spread and has become completely uncontrollably, untreatably malignant. Now, a success story in the early detection thing is cervical cancer. Before the Pap smear was invented, ladies, go get your screening. It's very stupid not to. Actually, I'm preaching to the choir. Y'all are smart people, so I'm sure you got it all. Anyway, before the Pap smear was invented, cervical cancer was basically a death sentence for women. Now, we're all good. We catch it before, well, not all good, but we catch it, generally speaking, in its earlier stage where it can be targeted and treated. And here's a shout out for basic scientists. The Pap smear was developed by a dude studying the menstrual cycle in the guinea pig. Okay? That is as far away from real life as possible, so you basic scientists, don't let anybody tell you you're wasting your life, because nobody knows what scientific discovery will be worth it, okay? Don't let anybody tell you that. Okay. To cancer stem cells. So why is it some people go into remission and then have new tumor growth? We think it's because there are these little suckers called cancer stem cells that basically lie dormant and hide while the patient undergoes treatment through either surgery, radiation, chemotherapy. And then when the coast is clear, it comes out, becomes aggressive, activates, proliferates, and restarts the whole process again. Because if you think about it, the definition of cancer is just overly proliferative cell, right? All you need is one. All you need is one crazy dude to just start it all, and you get it. you get it going. And a second hypothesis is that the cancer stem cell kind of promotes this tumor-growing environment. So if you target the cancer stem cell, it basically loses, the tumor loses its, like, chutzpah, or, and then kind of degenerates. I don't know if that was a I don't even know what that word means. I think I used it right. But you get the point. You're getting at the rate, right? All right, three. Shaping a tumor environment. A tumor is not a homogeneous bulk of exactly the same cancer cells, okay? You have white blood cells, blood vessels that feed the tumor cells, connective tissue, and whatnot. Now, the thing is, we're finding out that the environment that these tumors live in, that little circle over there, they have very different preferences than the normal tissue surrounding it, like source of food. Like, normal tissue prefer glucose, these guys prefer fatty acids, blah, blah, blah. I would go into the Krebs cycle, but I won't. So the idea is, one acronym for all the metabolites of the Krebs cycle, officer cannot keep, officer cannot keep sucking semen for money, okay? Asking me, what is oxaloacetate, citrate, isocitrate, alpha-ketoglutarate, sucking semen, succinyl-CoA, succinate, fumarate? Yeah. For money, malate. All right, you, nobody will forget that. I've remembered that since, like, frickin' freshman year of college. And I know some of you will thank me when you're all taking MCATs or whatever. Anyway, so the idea is, so the idea is to target the tumor. If we're aware of this preference, maybe we can starve the tumor by starving the entire environment of this thing that this tumor has a strong preference for. If my evil twin likes chocolate and I like bacon, just starve the house of chocolate and my evil twin dies, right? Four, circulating tumor cells. We all know that tumor that has spread is the worst. How does it happen? We think cancer cells undergo some sort of transformation, enters a nearby bloodstream, floats around until it lands in some distant organ, and boom, you have metastasis. Can we target these circulating tumor cells? Better yet, can we stop the primary tumor from metastasizing by blocking that transformation? Fifth and final, individualized medicine. We all know, and now we really appreciate, the variability in every individual with cancer. Can we get cancer cells from each individual's, grow them in a dish, hit them with all the different mix of drugs and doses, see which treatment is most effective, and throw it back in the patient? How cool is that? So then they can get individualized treatment instead of the blank chemotherapeutic treatment, which doesn't work in the first place too well, and secondly, which completely ignores the variable nature of cancer. So there's really, really, really cool stuff going on, and I listed only five that's near and dear to my heart because that's how scientists do. But there is more. There are many, many, many scientists who are dedicating a lot of time and effort. We are all obsessed with our questions. We can't stop. Now, so this is where... Oh, snap. All right. Well, this is where I tell you or explain to you. What? She's in Hawaii on vacay. This is my boss, by the way. Anyway, this is where I'm supposed to tell you that I have drunk of the Michigan Kool-Aid. I believe in the Michigan difference, and this is why. This is my boss. Is that laughter or scoffing? I will defend my position. Anyway, this is my boss, surgeon, scientist, soccer mom. I love her. Probably would stalk her if I could. But she's not getting the link to this video. So. Anyway, she's awesome because apart from being awesome, she's also head of the Translational Oncology Program, or TOP. Now, translational research is the bridge between basic and clinical research where doctors and scientists really try to bring what they learn in the lab directly to the patients. And it's so important that we have collaboration, because cancer is a gargantuan monster. No one man or lab is going to find the cure, the blanket cure, or even the cure to one single type of cancer. Not even the cure to one subtype of a type of cancer. We need collaboration. And Diane has recruited many, many of the leading scientists, really, in the field to this program to promote collaboration. And when I say collaboration, though, we're not talking about just researchers and doctors. We're also talking about the public. Remember these drugs? The research in the years preceding the FDA approval was really driven mainly by public demand for a cure. I don't know if you've ever heard of the book, The Emperor of All Maladies. It's a fantastic book. I said, woo, I support you. Okay, everybody go read it if you're interested at all. It's extremely informative, very well written, but well researched, the doctor wrote it. Hopefully it was well researched, and I'm quoting it. The years preceding the approval of these guys was really, really, really driven by many individuals and activists who donated a lot of money and time to really putting cancer number one, in the minds of everybody in the country. Now, look at the year, FDA approval years. That's over a decade ago. I think that's unacceptable. The last time the FDA approved a cancer-specific drug was a decade ago. That scares the crap out of me. And I think it's partly because of the emergent complex nature of cancer, absolutely. But I think it's also because the entire country no longer cares as deeply as it did back when we were doing this research. And I think that might be because there's a little bit of a disconnect between the research community and the public. And that needs to go away, because cancer is too big for everyone to not be involved. And by everyone, we mean researchers, doctors, and you guys. And for that, we need a bridge. And the dear love of my heart has created... She's seriously not getting this link. The dear love of my heart has created one such a bridge for everybody in Ann Arbor. And the event is called One Day Closer. It is Saturday, May 9th, 2015. Basically, it's a day-long event where everyone in the community is invited to check out North Campus Research Complex. There will be booths and talks and tours. Booths. Wait, what did I say? Booths. English is not my first language. I'm serious, it's not. I can tell you really, no. Anyway, yeah, booths. Places where you can ask questions. You can ask anybody any question you can think of when it comes to cancer research. The appropriate person will be there. You will be able to ask the surgeon about the logistics of getting a tumor into the lab. There is a shit ton of logistics and paperwork. You can ask a scientist, like a real-life scientist, not like a student, like what he does to get... I'm just kidding! We're awesome! You can ask a scientist really exactly what he does to get... to like isolate mutations and to study it. You can ask, if you're interested, somebody from the animal facility, what measures are in place to ensure ethical research, because we care about that too, believe it or not. So go. You will enjoy it. May 9th, one of my closest friends is getting married that day, and I'm going to fit this into my schedule somehow. So if you're interested, I know you can do it too. Take out your kids. Take out your wife. Go. Everybody's going to... Everybody's gonna love it, and if you're a nerd, you will love it. This is evidence that we do have fun, maybe in the lab, and also evidence that Diane sucks at selfies. Please email me if you have any questions. Feel free to email me. Thank you.